Okay, wait, try that again.
Try what again?
I don't know. Talk to me.
Oh, sound checking. Yes. Okay, great. I'm not focused. That's kind of my whole condition. Fuck, I forgot to take my medication.
Welcome to the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, the only Survivor podcast that reminds you,
pull the damn handle, Bob!
I am your host, Stephen Levine, with my co-host, Jared Sheldon. Jared, dude, don't forget to pull the handle.
That's how you leave a turd in the toilet.
We don't want that. That is for certain.
This season's gonna be something, huh? We're in for some type of ride.
What makes you say that?
This is a mess.
I thought this episode was pretty enjoyable.
I agree. I actually really enjoyed this episode. Man, these people are dumpster fires.
Across the board, everyone dumpster fire?
No, no. But like, originally I thought this cast was kind of boring. And I still think that about, I think, most of them. But maybe that's just not getting a lot of the, like, impressions of them. But like, Candy and Paloma and Ace and JC and Randy. That's some fucking characters, man.
I once again have to remind you, it is sugar.
What did I say?
Candy.
God damn it. It's all the same to me, Steven.
Everything's sweet.
It's what I can't have.
Is this your new Sydney Sid?
Oh, I'm rubbing off on you.
It's true. Your week doing well?
It's a lot.
It's been a bit.
It's been a lot. Turns out trying to stage and rehearse an entire show in 4 rehearsals makes for a lot of stress.
Makes Jared a stressed boy.
It's true. But by the time this comes out, we will open tomorrow. We will not have been open. We will open the day after this comes out.
Congrats.
I'm excited.
You did it.
We have a good cast of people
in the future. Congrats
in the future. Congrats. Yeah, we will have done tech, but we will not be open. Boy, saying that out loud made me very nervous. For the first time.
It'll be fine. It always comes together, right?
Yes. I want to make sure and be very mindful of it not just always coming together on the backs of other people filling in gaps that they shouldn't have to. Like, that's the thing that happens in theater a lot, where it's like, it always comes together, and then you look around, it's like, yeah, it's because your actors are killing themselves doing a million different things because you didn't give them, like, the proper tools.
Yeah.
Or your crew is burnt the fuck out because you changed a bunch of shit. And it came together, but it came together off of, like, the backs of their suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Trying not to do that.
Okay.
Yeah. How was your week?
Good. I got, like, a bunch of shots yesterday. It was fun.
What?
I got my yearly physical and went to a new doctor that I was super excited about. Like, he seems awesome. He seems on it. But also, I got my tetanus shot.
That one hurts.
It actually isn't too bad.
Oh, okay.
I'm surprised. I was expecting the worst, and it's just minor sore arm right now.
Hmm.
Maybe I'm distracted by the fact that I have 2 shots in the other arm, which is COVID and flu.
Oh, how are you feeling?
I actually feel fine. Okay. Surprisingly, now I go in expecting the worst because I had 1 bad reaction on my 2nd overall shot to the COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But as of right now, I'm still standing and we're 24 hours removed.
Steven, getting your flu shot in almost April that's crazy work.
I agree, but he recommended it and I'm like, whatever.
Had you not gotten it yet?
I got it last year, like at the start
You're
of flu
season.
You're
supposed to get it every year.
I know.
Okay.
At the start of flu season, so like around October-ish, I got it.
So it'd been like 1.5 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just got like, you know, a nice round of injections.
Sure.
Yeah.
Something I know nothing about.
And once again, I made the joke to my nurse, hey, because they did the blood panel as well.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm a good bleeder. You're going to be fine. And she's like, ha ha ha, that's funny. Oh my God. Yeah, you are a good bleeder.
Hey, good for you.
Here we are. That's how I paid for college.
That's dystopian as fuck. I get freaked out with blood draws. Not anything bad. I always tell them that. I'm like, hey, by the way, I'm just gonna, like, be on TikTok. I'm gonna be ignoring you. I'm just gonna be dissociating, basically. And they always are like worried I'm gonna pass out. I'm like, no, I'm not like squeamish about blood. just like the mechanics of putting a needle into the vein freak me out.
Oh, 100%. I don't want to watch. I'm okay with it.
And I remember one time as a kid, a very new phlebotomist, like, not being able to find the vein and poking a lot and, like, moving it around, and I could feel it moving the vein. Huh. And that was rough. That scarred me. And the last time I did it, they had someone training. And I didn't want to be like, no, I'm so sorry. Can she not do this? I gave her one poke, and she did it. And the other nurse was, like, guiding her through stuff. And I was, but, like, boy, I know that everyone needs training to do their jobs. Like, nobody is born a phlebotomist.
But I don't want to be the one being trained on.
I want them to be in year four of their career with 17 years of experience.
I get it.
They aren't a person. They are a phlebotomist robot, because a robot can't make mistakes.
Jared openly advocating for AI.
No. No, that's just the mental hoops I have to jump through to not be like, oh, this is a human being with flaws and, like, could have be having a bad day and make a mistake. And I'm just going to pretend like, nope, they are perfect at everything always. This is Jesus drawing my blood. Thank you.
Ah, yes, of course. Well, then he's actually drawing your water.
That's what? No, no. Well, he's drawing my wine. You drink wine. You're Catholic. You drink wine for the blood of Christ.
That's a good point. I mix my metaphors.
Yeah.
So yeah, okay, yeah. He's drawing your wine.
He's
sure,
drawing your wine.
I'm here for it. He's drawing your wine. He's drawing your wine. He drew your wine. Anyway, that's a joke for almost nobody. Jared.
Steven.
We have a lot of emails. So speaking of jokes for nobody... emails. If you want to email us, feel free to do so. SurvivorTBT@gmail.com, or you can message us on Reddit, u/SurvivorTBT, or on Patreon. You can follow us on Patreon. Send us messages there. I do actually have one note from our Patreon from Josh. Josh recommends for our spinner wheel, we are adding Amazing Race.
Cool.
Season 7. This is Robin Ambers on season.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. They get to come on and play the Amazing Race.
Nice.
Hooray.
Oh, I did start watching Taskmaster, by the way. That's something I forgot to mention. I just really like Taskmaster.
It's so good. I'm glad you're on it. Yay. Also, The Conversation, because of Gene Hackman's recent death.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, we're adding those to the wheel.
All right.
Put it on the spinner wheel. On our emails, Carl sent a nice email, also followed up with, hey, a lot of the stuff that I already messaged you was... said already, so feel free to jump halfway down my email. So I'm going to do that. First off, Parv played a great game. She forged great relationships and put herself at the center of all of the season's main coalitions. This is the finale email from last season, in case that wasn't clear.
And if you didn't listen, at the end of our interview with Eric, we did a mailbag. We didn't mention that anywhere in the title or in the... I don't know if we mentioned in the episode. We just kind of went, yeah, it's on there secretly.
Yeah.
Understand our format or get left behind, I guess.
We've established kind of a format at this point now, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the bonus, we go mailbag.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me. If not, oh well.
Oh well.
I feel like if it were me listening to that and I saw the little bar scroller, we finish up the interview with Eric and there's still like an hour left.
More for people that skip bonus episodes, just to let them know.
Sure. In a way, she wasn't an afterthought in any of the conversations. She deserves a lot of praise for the fact that the Black Widow Brigade may not have ever even existed without her.
Agreed.
That being said, she did have quite a lucky few breaks throughout the season. Luck plays a part in every winter story, no doubt, but here are all the things that went right for Parv. 1. Yao Man smashed Johnny Fairplay's head into the boat.
Well, I mean, if you want to go further back than that, Johnny Fairplay got smashed at the Music Awards.
Oh,
that
true.
Broke his jaw.
My God. Somehow we can connect this back to 9/11.
Small domino, big domino.
Yeah. Gerard Way wrote a song.
No, no. Here we go. I can do it.
Oh, my God.
So, okay. 9/11 happens. Survivor gets out of the Jordanian desert, which I think would have been enough for the show to not continue, which then leads to Pearl Islands, which then leads to Johnny Fairplay's fame and getting his jaw smashed.
All right, there it is. Cool. So apparently she was probably going to be the first boot. Pretty much everyone has stated she would have been.
Hmm.
Chet got hurt when he, Amy, Tracy, and Eric could have eliminated either Suri or Ozzy, thereby taking a lot of power away from Parv at the merge. Swapped Irai, never went to Tribal, which not only gave Parv time to develop her alliance with Alexis and Natalie, but also probably saved her again.
That one I push back a little bit on, because it is luck, but it is also skill. Like, their tribe was good enough to not go to Tribal. That's not just a lucky break.
As several members of that tribe, including Alexis, have said that they were prepared to ally with Jonathan to vote her out then as well. Four, Alexis picked Amanda, Parv's closest ally, to go to exile, where she found the idol and saved herself.
Yeah, dumb decision.
Five, most obviously there was a final two instead of final three, most likely due to all the evacs changing the schedule. I bring this up not to knock Parv, but to make this point. The audience at the time noticed a lot of this, and what they couldn't see at first came out soon after in the interviews. Most of them also held the opinion that she wasn't the main mover and shaker of the Women's Alliance. It was Ceri's idea to blindside Ozzy, Ceri's idea to convince Eric to give up the necklace, and Amanda's idol that got rid of Alexis. So, at first, people respected Parv as a player and the winner, sure, but she wasn't viewed as an all-time great. The two main takeaways from the finale were, A, Ceri should have won, and B, damn, Amanda really blew it again.
Yeah, that's fair.
But then the mystique began to grow. Micronesia obviously was an instantly iconic season, and as the years passed, it began to gain legitimately legendary status. Jeff made constant references to the electric blindsides of the Black Widow Brigade. Incoming recruits were sat down to watch Micronesia before going out to play their own seasons as an example of how to play Survivor. Micronesia consistently topped season's rankings as well. As her season's reputation grew, Parv grew with it. People's memories started to fade a little, and Jeff constantly touting her as the ultimate Black Widow. Parv started to get unilateral credit for all of the moves of the Black Widow Brigade made together. She started to be remembered as a dominant force who steamrolled her way to the end. Her legend status grew probably as much, if not more, during her time after Micronesia as it did during. Once again, none of this is to say Parv is overrated or lucky or undeserving or whatever. I think she's incredibly intelligent and a great manipulator. I just find it fascinating how the aura of Parvity came to be. Essentially, with the general public consolidating all of their memories of a great season into one person. Of course, there's still future seasons to go that will affect things.
Sure, yeah. Thank you for that. I think that there's some things in there that get touted as luck that aren't. Like, being the one to bring together the Black Widow Brigade and being, like, the pivot and leader of it. Like, she goes with Amanda and Ceri, and you're like, oh, yeah, Amanda, her closest ally, found the idol. But she also was tight with Alexis and Natalie. And Ceri telling Eric to give up the necklace didn't save Parv. It saved Natalie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe then Eric keeps winning immunity and wins the season, but we don't necessarily know that's the case either. And then also comparing her, some lucky breaks that she had compared to, like, a winner like Earl, who kind of just dominated the game throughout, Parv had harder competition. Like, I think no matter who won Micronesia for the most part, probably would have been my number one winner with the way that the season developed, because they were all playing amazing games. Like, Ceri's the number one spot if she wins, because she has a really interesting and great story and would have, you know, she played the game incredibly well. Like, I can't think of a possible winner except maybe Eric that wouldn't have had the top spot, because all of them had such good games and Parv just came out on top.
Sure. On a more ominous note, though, this is a season where big flashy moves got Survivor a ton of positive attention. Obviously, Survivor does not just look at this and say, well, gee, that was fun. We sure got lucky there.
Yeah.
No, the influence of this season, blindside, strategy talk, surprising moments, carries over irrevocably into the future of Survivor. The shift might not be obvious for a couple seasons, but it happens.
I'm a little nervous about that, because you can take the wrong lessons of, like, trying to manufacture those moments instead of setting a solid foundation with casting and, you know, like, setting the game up correctly and letting it happen. And instead just being like, oh, I'm going to force that. I'm going to force it with this twist. I'm going to force it with this mechanic. And that, it would not be ideal.
Sure. Don't get me wrong. I think the season is a masterpiece. It balances raw emotion and complex relationships with invigorating strategy damn near perfectly. It's basically the closest thing Survivor has come to an action movie with a heart. But I don't necessarily love all the lessons production ended up learning from it. That said, many people do. So I'm not saying dread the future, not all of it, at least. As always, super fun podcast. Very excited for Gabon.
Thank you.
Hooray. Let's keep moving on with Michael's finale email. You might be shocked to learn this, but Micronesia, while liked at the time, was not unanimously loved. People were hella disappointed that Suri lost at the last moment.
Yeah.
Parv was seen as another Amber type winner, i.e. the less threatening UTR female winner under the radar, despite her not being under the radar at all, even in the Cook Islands. She was seen as lucky and kind of disparaged as a winner, but over time, reputation improved.
Yeah.
Something else you might be interested...
Young women are not given credit for their moves.
Correct.
As much.
Something else you might be interested to learn is that Eliza's jury question, much longer, which we talked about.
That's interesting.
A lot of interesting things. At the reunion, Amanda had recently learned that Ozzy had cheated on her.
Oh.
So their relationship was already a sham by then. However, I did like his subtle dig at the Denise controversy from China in one of his responses to Jeff. I think the tiebreaker from Micronesia, although this is never confirmed, would have been getting Amy to come back and vote from her pre-jury vacation and voting for one of two women. But
that would have been weird.
That would have been weird. Is that, I mean, could be fair.
I think, honestly, what they should have just done is had America vote at that point.
Maybe secretly Amy was just in a box, like just off stage, and she was listening to the whole thing.
She would have been on stage, Steven. It was the reunion. They were all there.
No, sorry.
Oh, like during filming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Ah, yes.
Like she was here the whole time.
They put her in a fake mustache and ever hold a camera.
Would that be ridiculous? Like if that ever happened, someone just watching Survivor Tribal Councils from a secret box. Would that be funny to you?
Do like the Game Changer bit with the bingo where they're watching?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Like, oh, actually, this jury's not the real jury. We swapped it out with a random jury.
Oh, boy. If this had been Final Three, Suri wins, but it's closer than you think because Parv has a locked vote with Natalie while Amanda has Ozzy and James.
And probably Alexis for Parv.
Eliza, Eric, and Alexis have all said that various points that they would have voted for Suri.
Okay, never mind. I was wrong immediately. But in the next sentence.
Alexis has changed her vote a few times as well.
Okay.
As for Jason, who the hell knows what goes on in his mind? Either way, for sure it's a close vote. Yeah. I have complicated feelings about Micronesia. A lot of fans say on a rewatch it loses some luster and is all sizzle and no steak.
Do you feel that, Steven? This is a rewatch for you.
I think it's fun for me. Like, it's even if you know what's happening, yes, you're not hit with the, oh my God, huge moment, but you're still like, yeah, that was a pretty good move.
Cool.
Or... In Eric's case, watching it, being like, maybe this time he won't give it up. Maybe maybe this time he'll learn. No. It has a clear narrative and a story to it, but I also don't think it's the absolute best season of all time either. In my tier list, it would be A tier, but below S tier, there are several seasons coming up in this era that I would consider S tier, with the worst upcoming season being B tier. So we're definitely in the middle of a renaissance for Survivor.
You put Gabon as B tier. Interesting.
After the doldrums of seasons 11 through 14. Though I don't think any of those are below C tier either. As for Gabon being bad because it's in Africa, I want to let you know it's a very different part of Africa being in West Africa versus East Africa. And the landscape is extremely different and more hospitable. So to allay Jared's fears, the season won't be so bad because people are literally dying.
Yes, I did notice that in the second episode. We're not like, hey, we can just hang out in the lake. We can just swim in the lake and talk. Cool. Great. Was kind of worried about that. Was like, if there's just hippos hanging around too.
Fair. Moving on to Josh's email. You see it a lot more on Big Brother because of the 24-hour live feeds, but many of these reality shows have issues with bullying.
That makes sense.
It comes naturally into a situation with competitiveness and imbalances of power, similar to real life.
And the types of people that are probably vying to be on reality TV at this point.
Oh, yeah. Similar to real life, the people on top preserve their power by pushing down on others. Let's do this one. This one from Lily. Late night Survivor thoughts.
Hell yeah.
Thinking about Jeff.
Hey, girl, you up? I'm thinking about Jeff.
Let's talk about Amanda. Remember when Jared thought she wouldn't go far in Fans versus Favorites?
Yeah, no, I, yep. Mm-hmm.
Because of how healthy she looked in the China finale? Okay, cool. I just wanted to bring that up again.
Thank you.
I love it. Thank you.
That'll go down in infamy.
Anyways, I started thinking about how she is at that reunion before the votes are read, with the knowledge in her head that she might be the winner of not one, but $2 million. Then, once she hears that Todd wins, the thought process switches to, okay, well, I still have a shot at $1 million.
And I found love.
I can't make it to the final tribal twice in a row and not win, right? At least she had some time between those reunions to lessen the blow.
Yeah, to get cheated on and then lose Survivor.
Ugh.
Oof.
Something for the wheel, or just for the hell of it. I had originally thought it would be fun to just try and make Jared remember the names of the first boots in each season.
Oh, God.
But now I think it might be more fun to either rank them or put them in a hypothetical season against one another. Who would win? This is something I've been asking for so long. Who would be the ultimate first boot? No telling holes. If Survivor will ever...
It's the holes, man.
No telling if Survivor will ever actually give us this season, but... You know what they say, if you want something done right. Anyway.
Actually, it might be the Thailand guy, because apparently he was super creepy.
As always, thanks for the content. Love the Eric interview, but now I want ice cream.
That's fair.
For my host, Jared and Steven, this is Lily.
Aw, thank you, Lily.
That's really funny. Thank you, Lily. I'm going to do one more from Tyler. Tyler says, Michelle is working as a DJ in Las Vegas under the name DJ Soxy.
Cool, I guess.
Jillian founded Reality Rally, an event where fans can talk.
Wait, I was like, who the fuck is Michelle? And now I'm really like, yes, the first boot of Gabon. I was thinking of Fiji Michelle. I was like, why are we bringing her up?
No, the person that was here for less than an episode.
I already forgot her name. I remember her. Listen, I remember her personality, but I had forgotten her name.
Jillian founded Reality Rally, an event where fans can talk, race, and have fun with their favorite reality stars, including many castaways. The three-day event is here held yearly in the spring in Temecula, California. I see. In the spring. Spring not a place. Spring being yes. A time of year. It raises money to support Michelle's Place, a breast cancer resource center in Temecula.
Cool.
GC actually does stand for Golden Child.
Ah, okay.
There you go. Sugar got her nickname when she was 18 while working at the San Francisco-based 50s diner named It's Tops, where she worked as a waitress.
Wait, her name's Sugar. What do I keep saying again?
Candy.
Candy. Okay, it's Sugar, not Candy. Okay, great. Because when you said Sugar, I was like, that's wrong. It's... No. God damn it.
Yep. The nickname was coined by a fellow waitress. She noted that she was sweeter back then. Looking forward to next week. That's funny. I'm going to pull up a picture of Candy Kong from Donkey Kong. Do you know who this is?
Maybe. I've played the Donkey Kong games, some of them.
Candy Kong is like the worst kind of sex symbol in
what?
The Donkey
the
Kong
fuck
series.
Are you talking about?
Oh, you're gonna love this. Hold on.
Oh, I did not know about that.
Candy Kong's been in a lot of different games, and every iteration I'm like, oh, we're targeting the furries. All right.
That's gonna be my Halloween costume.
Candy Kong.
Yeah.
Here's her in her first iteration on the
Super
Nintendo.
Oh, no. Yeah, you should look up Candy Kong if you're not driving. That's wild.
Oh, my God. She was in the TV show with a very different look.
I didn't know there was a TV show. All right.
It's early 3D modeling, and it's really bad.
Hell yeah.
Really, really bad. Anyway, yeah, Candy Kong. Kind of funny.
Interesting.
We got more emails, but we'll save that for next time. Bumper.
All right, so this episode came out on October 2nd of 2008. I pulled quite a few things since the end of May 2008 when Micronesia released. So buckle up. Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper made an official historic apology to Canada's First Nations in regard to residential school abuse. Just as a reminder, not just America was terrible to its native population.
Oh, Canada, notoriously bad.
Yep. And that's like the first apology ever. Or at least
sad.
From the
government.
Or from the Prime Minister or something like that. Coldplay released Viva La Vida or Death album. Yeah.
My pop choir in high school definitely did that song, and it was fine.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
I think every pop choir did, or the show choir, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That one and the Glee version of Don't Stop Believin'.
Glee is the worst thing that's happened to America ever. That's not true.
That's not true.
There are worse things happening right now.
There are a lot of bad things in America. Continue.
But Glee is a war crime. I say that as a musical theater person.
Leah Michelle is going to find you if she can read the address.
Yeah. First day of legal same-sex marriage in California. The U.S. Supreme Court rules in the District of Columbia versus Heller that the ban on handguns is unconstitutional. I don't know. That one sounded important.
The District of where?
Columbia. What did I say?
No, you're correct, but okay. Stupid people in the government want to change it.
Yeah, God fucking damn it. Mamma Mia, the movie released.
Oh, yeah.
That's a piece of cinema history. I've actually never seen it.
It's got a lot of stars.
Most of my friends get really mad at me when I say that.
I think it's a good movie. I also haven't seen it.
Denmark is the first European country to confirm it is in recession in July.
Okay.
The Dark Knight comes out.
Nice.
Breaking Dawn comes out. The fourth book in the Twilight Saga.
Less nice.
Less nice. That's true.
Is it the fourth or the third?
It is the fourth.
Okay. I did not realize there were four.
I did not either, but that's what this says. So, there you go. The Russo-Gregorian War happens. It's only 5 days long, but I remember being like seeing a newspaper like in a gas station and being like, Russia invades Georgia, and being like, that should be a bigger deal.
Yeah, that's a problem.
What? They're in Georgia? I did not know Georgia was a country. Very young and children are stupid.
Yeah.
But yeah, full-scale land, air, and sea invasion, referring to it as a peace enforcement operation. Where have we heard that kind of shit since?
Mm-hmm.
Airbnb was founded. And then once there's a ceasefire in the Russo-Gregorian War, then, like, there's a part of Georgia that wants to break off in independence, and Russia supports them, so Georgia stops having diplomatic ties. I don't know, man. Ex-Soviet states are complicated.
Yeah.
The Baltic starts to slide into a recession as well. We kind of all know where that ends up going. Barack Obama is officially nominated.
Hooray.
Slumdog Millionaire comes out.
Hooray.
The Spring Temple Buddha statue is the world's largest statue. It's completed, at least at the time, in Zhaokun, Henan, China. Rent closes on Broadway.
Damn.
It was running this entire time. Yeah. At the, where was it based? At the Nederlander Theater. Rachel Maddow Show premieres.
Sometimes I forget there's like multiple Nederlander theaters.
I think it's the same company that owns them,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. But yeah, Rachel Maddow premieres.
Man, she's been on TV for a long time.
Uh-huh. U.S. government takes control of the two largest mortgage financing companies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Yep.
Yep. SpaceX launches its first private spacecraft into orbit. I didn't realize they'd been around for so long.
I didn't either.
The Dow Jones has its largest single day loss ever in at the end of September. That's the last one.
Nice.
Yeah, right about the time this first episode aired.
Oh, wow. So everyone's like, my retirement, my money, it's all gone. Let's turn on Survivor.
Yeah, exactly. The nightly news after this was bleak.
Yeah.
After they turned off Survivor for the night.
Rough.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Cool. And let us get into the episode. And I say this because it's the title of the episode. Episode 2, she obviously is post-op.
Yeah, so I have several questions about this title.
I do too.
Mostly being, where was it said? And my suspicion is that it's cut. That it's a scene that is cut, or like maybe in the extended release, like in the DVDs or something like that, or the extra commentary, but they cut it out. My question then follows, and I'm sure one of our listeners will write in, was this, if that is true, was it cut from the TV airing at the time? Or did they go back in and cut it from Paramount?
My guess is it was cut from the Paramount version.
I hate that, personally. Because, like, so just to explain why, this title sounds transphobic. This sounds like somebody accusing somebody of being, like, of being trans when they're not, or something along those lines of being, like, I assume maybe calling Crystal or one of the other girls very masculine. And being like, oh, well, obviously she's post-op or whatever.
Mm-hmm. From a brief Reddit glance, it seems like it actually did not make the cut. But, like, it was changed pre it coming out.
On TV?
On TV.
Okay, great.
But was it, because production found it offensive, but not too offensive to keep the title, I guess?
Yeah, weird. Okay. I prefer that, because I don't want them to go back and start cutting scenes out on Paramount. I want the time capsule of it, even when it's gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we can learn and say, oh, wow.
We shouldn't just pretend bad things didn't happen. But if they cut it from the original airing on TV, good. Good. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, boy.
Soapbox over.
Yeah, but I wanted that to be said, and I'm glad you jumped all over that, because if not, I was going to do the same.
Yeah, because it's why didn't they change the title? That's so weird.
I don't know. It sounds to me like someone high up was like, this has to stay, this is the title, and then some editors were like, no, we got to get rid of that.
Well, yeah, and I guess we don't know deadlines and stuff, too. Like, this is back when you're airing it on broadcast television. Mm-hmm. Like, when did you have to have your episode titles submitted to sure. be on, like, TV Guide and printed and stuff like that? Like, it might have been too late at that point, and
that's
they
fair.
Still cut it from the episode. But, yeah, it's and for an episode with such a strong narrative, it's weird.
Yeah. Okay. So, one, we have a pretty extended...
long recap.
Recap, yeah. I have to point out, I'm pretty sure they use the same map image as they do in The Amazing Race, where they go from one side of the globe to the other side of the globe. Is this just the standard CBS map image?
If it ain't broke.
If it ain't broke, yeah. But also, these are two shows that are airing on the same network that are also, like, running in tandem with each other. So I'm sure everyone would be like, hey, that's the same.
I mean, kind of on purpose. They're kind of like sister shows, really.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. But Amazing Race always wins the Emmys.
Yeah.
Anyway, Crystal talks a little bit, like, we're coming back from Tribal. Hey, we got rid of a major physical weak link. Glad. Someone says, I couldn't pick out, we got to win tomorrow. Randy coming in, the positive ray of sunshine. I want to win. I don't believe it's possible.
And to be clear, he says this in confession.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very important distinction versus saying it to your tribe.
These people are stupid. I don't blame them for being complete idiots, but they are.
Everyone but me is dumb, says Randy.
They don't know that they're idiots, but they are.
Have you heard of the Dunning-Kruger effect?
No.
It's a psychological phenomenon that Randy's kind of touching on here, that, like, when people are so dumb that they think they're smart, like, you don't realize that you're dumb because you are dumb enough that you can't, like... being the fact that you are dumb goes over your head.
Jared,
I fear it every day.
Jared, do you know do you know how many people have posted screenshots of their IQ test?
Yeah.
That say, look at me, I'm smarter than 91% of the world. And you look at it and it says you are in the 91st percentile.
Yeah, which is the opposite of that, actually.
And then you go, okay, well, you're proving your point here a little bit. I have seen far more than zero, let's put it that way. So we do the title sequence. We see some hippos. Always fun to flash to the hippos because you're like, those things could kill you.
Yeah, always scary. Hippos are scary.
We go back to Fong for a little bit, and Randy is noticing that, hey, we're only 7 days in, and more than half of our rice is gone.
That's bad. That's very bad.
That's very bad. We've been eating...
Three meals a day.
Can we, like, hey, we got to do something. Can we compromise, move it to two?
Rationing is not a new invention. It's existed forever.
But, man, everyone's like, yeah, we can do that. That makes sense. And GC's like, no, we threw away a bunch of rice early on. Now I have to suffer to make up for everybody else's mistakes.
So, yeah, is GC just going to keep eating three meals a day?
Yeah, so GC makes himself some rice, but nobody else gets any.
That's going to go well.
I don't think
that's
how
it's going to go. Hey, I'm starting to think GC's not very good at Survivor.
What makes you say that, Jared?
This next scene. Or I guess this scene.
Yeah. Randy goes on and says GC's a cancer. He can't be told to do anything. He's essentially just living for himself, by himself, but in a group where we are all reliant on him.
Yeah, he's sort of taken his ball and gone home, emotionally and strategically.
Yeah, and then he goes on and like, hey, Randy, are you the leader? You've kind of been talking like the leader.
This fight's so fucking, like, weird and uncomfortable.
Of course, Randy doesn't want to jump in and say, yes, of course I'm leading. No.
He doesn't like these people. He doesn't think they're good at the game. He doesn't want to be their leader.
We decided we didn't need a leader, so just drop it. Like, we don't need this conversation. Boy, GC goes, I don't need to drop shit.
I can ask you questions if I want to ask you questions.
Yeah, I'm GC.
Okay. That's not going to do you any favors in this game where people are voted off.
Nope.
GC goes home this episode if they don't win immunity, I think.
I think you're right. His performance in both camp life and challenges was pretty not great.
Right. If he was good at challenges, then like maybe you get away with this, but you can't be bad at both.
No. And Dan comes together and says, hey, it'd be great if we could be unified as a team. Says this to the audience, not to everybody. But boy, it'd be nice if that could happen. Moving on to Coda. Coda, they have some time.
Sorry, I do want to point out one thing with that Dan confessional that's so funny.
Okay.
Where we have this stupid fight that lingers on for too long of GC just being an asshole, frankly.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to Dan's confessional going, I don't think we've pulled together as a tribe yet. Like, that's verbatim what they say to transition into his confessional. And, like, awesome storytelling. I was dying.
You don't think so there, Dan. I wonder what makes you say that.
What could have tipped you off to that?
At Coda, Marcus fishes while others cheer on. Charlie talks about his alliance with Marcus, Corinne, and Jackie.
The Shrek alliance.
The Shrek alliance, of course. Bob is quote-unquote wooable.
Sure.
Yeah, we could bring him in. We right now concerned that there could be a 5-on-4, but they're not organized this other 5, so we're probably in pretty good shape.
Well, yeah, they don't want to work together. Like, Paloma and Ace despise each other.
Hate each other. Absolutely hate each other.
Like, usually having an alliance of 4 and a tribe of 9 sounds like a bad idea, but in this case it kind of works out.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where we go next. Paloma hates Ace. Sugar loves Ace. For some reason, Sugar and Ace have a connection, is what Sugar says.
Sure.
I trust Ace. I trust that he's going to take care of me as much as he can.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll see where that goes. I don't trust Ace as far as I can throw him. It's way later in the episode, but I think it was Corinne being like, I don't think his accent is real. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I think you're right, actually.
This is a meme on the Survivor subreddit that his accent is not real.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
That's hilarious.
People have run with this for a long time. Do I have a definitive answer? No. I'm sure many people will absolutely say something in our emails.
No, and like, do I think it's actually fake? Eh, maybe not necessarily. But like, I went, yeah, I could see it. I could absolutely see it, and sometimes it's not about the answer. It's about, like, is the question, like, the fact that it is a question that we go, does lead, like, it tells you a lot about Ace. Because I don't think anybody would be like, if people were like, Jillian's accent is fake, he'd be like, no, it's not. That's very authentic who she is. And Ace just feels like, again, a fucking Bond villain walking around.
We get tree mail. There's a hint that there's betting up for play here in this reward challenge. And Ace says, you know what? It's not that really important. We're sleeping fine. And Paloma's face, just so unimpressed. And this is a snapshot. And I want to be clear that this is a snapshot. I'm sure he's saying, like, you know, in the grand scheme of things, whatever. But we're trying to make Ace look like a bad guy here.
Well, I mean, it is kind of a weird thing to say. And I understand the intention of, like, sitting out your stronger people.
Yes.
If you have to sit people out. That makes sense. But starting it with, I don't really care if we win this one, is weird.
Mm-hmm. And he has to backtrack. He's like, well, no, we still want to win. But I'm not saying throw the challenge, but we should maybe not sit out our weakest people because immunity is coming and we have to play those people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have more to talk about with that, but it's in the reward challenge. So sure. I'll just hold that thought.
Okay. Anyway, reward challenge. One person holds onto a post, two people from the other tribe try to remove you and drag you across a finish line. And like I said, we are playing for blankets, hammock, pillows, a mat, and one person being sent to exile.
And a partridge in a pear tree. I really do like this challenge, I think.
It's a fun
challenge. We've done it a few times. It doesn't feel like it's... There are some challenges that you see that Survivor does in this era and before where you're like, that is just unsafe and bad for the game. But this one's good. This one, I don't think is, you know, as long as people aren't, like, going for eyes and throat and the stuff that is, like, actually, like, against the rules of the challenge, it's physical, it's intense, and it's not going to, it shouldn't cause, like, injuries that inhibit players continuing the game.
I do wish this was played on more of like a sandy beach than...
Well, that's part of the problem of just being in Gabon.
Right. Whereas the impact on the body is lesser than if you're being dragged across dirt.
Yeah, that's true.
Whatever. All of those are pretty minor scratches.
Right, but we don't have like... We don't have sticks being impaled in people's legs.
Correct.
Or like dragging Chet concussed around a course, you know?
So this is interesting with the sit-outs, because they want to make it very specifically gendered.
But why? Because the only reason I say that is I was expecting it to be like, okay, cool, then we do like men only in one round and women only in one round. But then they mix up the genders anyway.
I think because of how the tribe splits, they didn't want to do men versus women only because they couldn't mathematically.
So then why does it matter if it's even?
Exactly.
Like it's weird to have it both ways. It doesn't make any sense.
I think they were trying to give Fung a shot. Although,
it helps the other tribe because they get to sit out three women that aren't going to participate that are... And like it's... The like Crystal's the strong woman, mm-hmm. and she's on Fong. So like the more rounds that had to have women in them, the more it would have favored Fong.
It does seem unnecessarily complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so Coda sits out three women, all the blondes, Corinne, Jackie, Kelly, except for Sugar.
Yeah.
And Fong has to sit out a man, and so Ken sits this one out.
Sure.
Also, kind of does him a favor.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, first round, Ace and Dan are on the post. Ace fakes a yawn.
Yeah.
This guy. And Coda does a good job and pretty much wipes this one.
Ace is really good at this.
Yeah. Round two, we have Susie and Paloma on the post. Ace says to Paloma, hey, you should be on the post. Is this setting her up for failure?
Yes.
Yes.
100%. Yes. 100. Yeah. No, it's almost too obvious that, like, oh, you don't like Paloma. And you want her to fail for more ammunition to send her home instead of Sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you didn't put Sugar on the post because you don't want Sugar to look bad when Crystal beats the shit out of her.
I think this was the part that had to be gendered. Like, it had to be this person on the post.
That makes sense.
But the two grabbers didn't matter.
Yeah.
And first round was all men. Second round, Susie and Paloma on the post. Bob and Sugar were the pullers, and Randy and Crystal were the pullers for Fong.
They might have had to do one man, one woman on this one.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, I mean, I kind of understand selling this one a little bit and just being like, all right, well, Crystal's got this one in the bag.
And so Fong destroys Paloma. She doesn't stand a chance.
No.
And we're 1-1. Next one wins. So we go Ace and Dan back on the post, Bob and Marcus polling, and Crystal and Maddie. This is funny because GC was terrible in the first round polling. He gave up, essentially.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that. He was awful. Jeff, I don't remember the last time Jeff called out somebody for lack of effort this, like, at least not this early in. Like, I've heard him be like, you gotta dig deep, or like, oh, this person's kind of like, you know, they're so far behind that they've given up. But I can't remember him being like, wow, that you got to do better than that right now. What are you doing? Why are you standing there? I know that it's happened, but damn, dude.
I think this isn't the first time he's called out GC specifically.
He's being really hard on competitors this season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the teams. Like, yeah. He kind of, what's the non-Fong tribe name?
Coda.
Coda, thank you. At Tribal, he like flips the script and is like, well, you lost two in a row, so now Fong's the dominant tribe. It's like, okay.
Sure, whatever, Jeff. Yeah, but so they flipped GC for Crystal, which was the absolute correct decision.
Yes.
And boy, this was a close one. This one was well fought. Oh, go on.
Well, I was saying, I could see this being the conversation around this round of the challenge being where that gross scene gets cut. Or whether it was in this or about this, because Crystal steps in for one of the guys when it was all guys for the rest of the, for that first round. And then everyone except for her is a guy in this round.
I agree.
But, yeah.
And I think it just shows where we are as a society where you kind of have to dance around like, oh, Crystal is a larger athletic woman.
Yeah. She's like, literally an Olympic athlete.
Being called big and strong is probably perceived as an insult for some people, but like in the athletic side, that's a compliment.
Yeah, they're going after her for being masculine.
But it's all about perception.
Yep.
And it's just a interesting thought that I had.
Like, gendered ideals of like what a man is, what a woman is, what attributes we assign to those things. And then because Crystal doesn't fit into that stereotypical box, being like, oh, that person's not that gender then.
But like, fuck, I want Crystal on my team.
Yo, Crystal's a beast.
Crystal's a beast.
I'm excited for her.
More so here than any running challenge we've seen thus far.
Which is weird because she's a track and field athlete.
They're strong. Sprinters are strong.
Also, I guess maybe she's the field side of track and field.
No, she's a sprinter.
She's a sprinter? Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yep. And yeah, this is really funny because Dan is like screaming out to his side while he's being dragged across the ground. Crystal, hurry up. I can't hold on much longer.
He dug deep.
He dug deep. You gotta dig deep. And yeah, they win. So Fong wins their first challenge of the season.
And they desperately needed it.
And they desperately needed it. They pick Sugar to go to exile here.
Yeah.
Do you buy in what Sugar's saying is that they pick someone who they perceive as weak?
Yes.
And stupid?
I don't know about stupid. I mean, maybe. I think it has more to do with the physical side of it than the mental necessarily. But I think that it is kind of dumb to send one of your stronger competitors. Well, I think it depends on how you think the game's going to go, right? Because there's an advantage of sending Sugar, because even if she finds the idol, then she can use it to keep herself around if she's a target, and makes that tribe weaker because they're going to vote somebody else out that isn't Sugar, sure, eventually, if they get there. But then you run the risk of her keeping that idol all the way through if she's able to find it. You don't necessarily want to have one of the stronger guys like Dan have the idol who was sent before, because he can use it post-merge and keep himself around and keep winning challenges. So yeah, I think I think that's kind of right on.
Yeah, it's all about how you want to play this game. I think neither is wrong. I am all for put a target on someone that you think is going to be a problem and have their tribe figure it out. And if not, you target them right away.
Yeah, and definitely a little bit of underestimating Sugar, I think.
Yeah. So that happened. She gets sent.
Oh, I forgot to say at the beginning of the challenge, Bob's just sitting there like picking his teeth.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And the camera's just like up in his teeth with him brushing that. I saw that note. I was like, that's a dumb little thing, but Bob very comfortable with himself.
Back at Coda, Ace tries to downplay this. Yeah, it wasn't a loss, you guys. It wasn't too bad. And Paloma's sitting there. I stood no chance against Crystal. Like, she's big. And here's where I kind of came in. Everyone goes off and talks about how weak Paloma was. And it's, like you said, it's playing into Ace's plan.
Yeah. And if Ace has zero haters, Paloma is dead. Like, she's no longer with us if everyone loves Ace.
Ace says her lack of motivation just sealed what we were all thinking. Her contract of death.
Sure.
Too much.
Bond villain.
Exile. Sugar could have taken the comfort. Could have
taken the comfort?
Yeah, that's the word I was looking for. Mm-hmm. Could have taken the comfort and goes off instead. Give me the clue. She finds all the clues. I mean, jump to the chase here. She does a good job.
Yeah.
She obviously, like, there are moments where you're like, oh, honey, it's okay. It's just water. Go in there.
No, I felt the opposite, actually.
Oh, really?
So, like, her getting the still water going to get the idol, dude, I don't know what kind of fucking alligators or snakes or what the fuck is in this still unmoving leeches. Like,
that's fair.
I don't know what lives in Africa, in this part of Africa. I don't know what lives in Gabon that could just be waiting in that water to fucking murder me or, like, I didn't like that at all.
Jared, what I know for a fact is that there are no snakes in still water. They're all in the plane.
God damn it, Stephen. Moving on from that.
Okay, anyway.
I really just want to highlight how good this section is.
Yeah, it's like, great.
And Exile Island not being an island is weird. It is weird for it just to be Exile Square Mile or whatever it is. But the storytelling and editing of Candy's journey here, Sugar's journey
there
here,
you go.
Of Sugar's journey here, I psych myself out. Is awesome. Like, first of all, her motivations for going on Survivor are bizarre. Like, girl needs therapy, not Survivor. I mean, maybe she's also had therapy. But, like, be like, to get over my dad is a fine motivation, but it's just kind of like, oh, you didn't necessarily come here to win, and that's okay.
I like her other statement that she says right before that is to grow up, to get a thicker skin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. And I didn't think I was going to like her very much, but this whole section made me like her a lot. Yeah. And it's well edited. She's funny. Kudos. This made the episode. Yeah. Like, the episode has a really strong narrative structure that starts from the last time on, where they highlight Paloma and Ace not liking each other from like one moment from the first episode and point it out. And knowing that this season is not as well regarded, honestly, I didn't feel like first episode kind of sucked. There wasn't a lot going on and it was a really long episode.
Yep.
This episode is awesome. So now I'm a little more excited going through the rest of the season. And Sugar's exile journey is the highlight of it for me.
Okay. I do want to point out that we are doing the same thing that we did in Micronesia with the clues, is that one clue leads to another clue leads to another clue to send you around. And like, it's not just you get more clues. You have to earn these clues.
It's so much better.
And I like that. I really do. But it does highlight the fact that Dan the lawyer never found the second clue.
Well, okay. So I have a conspiracy theory about that.
Go on.
Because the second clue is a map. Like, I think that they saw what Dan did and went, oh, we have to make this more obvious.
Sure.
Because Sugar, like, she has a map of where to go, and she still thinks there's no way it's this far away.
Sure.
She says out loud, she's like, I think I've gone too far. So, like, there was no fucking way that without some type of map or some type of indicator that, hey, that first clue is really, really far from where you are right now. Mm-hmm. Like, the first clue is super misleading. It says right across the lake, and then it's like a half a mile or something ridiculous. Yeah. Like, that camera pan in the first episode took forever to get there. I would have never fucking found that.
We actually have to bring back the Amazing Race globe to go from there to there.
You have to go back to Kenya to find the second clue.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. She gets all four clues. She gets the idol. She cries. It's a beautiful moment. My dad's been helping me through this. Great. Awesome. Anything else before we jump out of exile?
Where that like orange sand or whatever, it looked like it was just a fucking abandoned mine, like a phosphorus mine or something.
100%. It looked exactly like that.
So wild.
Minnesota has a bunch of mines, and it's just hole in the ground. Go look in hole in ground.
Hole in ground.
Yeah. Flashback to Coda. Bob is talking about, Paloma and Sugar on the bottom, and Ace comes in trying to work his magic. Yeah, we can trust Sugar. Like, we trust Sugar more than we can Paloma. And Bob reads right through this. He's protecting Sugar. I know he's protecting Sugar. If she makes the jury, she's going to vote for Ace to win this game. Which is a big jump in logic that both Sugar has to make it to jury and Ace has to make it to final tribal council.
Right.
But it's something you should be worried about.
Ace is clearly gunning to win this game. And everyone can tell it's interesting because he's like a con man, but he's also kind of obvious. Like, everyone calls out what he's doing.
Uh-huh.
So that's not great threat management.
So Bob goes and talks to Corinne saying, hey, Ace is making me nervous. And Corinne literally reads Ace for filth here. He's like, he put Paloma up on that to fail. Like, we know that that's the case. And hey, Why don't you come join our four? Like, we have four here. We could all vote as a block. It'd be great. How does Bob not have all the red flags right here?
I don't know. The way that she set it up didn't seem like it was necessarily an alliance. It was more like, hey, we also, the four of us have, like, I've had individual conversations with these other three people, and we kind of all agree that we don't like the way that's going. So it sounds like you're saying that same thing. So what if we all just teamed up for this vote? I think she hides it pretty well, actually.
I think she does do a good job. However, I would sit there and think, a four sounds kind of scary because nobody else has approached me with this.
Well, that would be five, though.
Yeah. So if we're making this group of five and no one else has talked to me about a group of five, why am I just hearing about it now?
Oh, I see. For like being on the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the hey, this is all happening in real time aspect of it would be the like she sells it like, oh, I just had this conversation 5 minutes ago. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm coming to you right now. Because we're all looking at Sugar and being like, I don't know.
Yeah. And Corinne sells it with a, I think he responds to bold moves.
Yes.
This is a bold move. And I think he'll respect me for that.
I like Corinne. She was the one that was like, I'm evil villain in the first episode, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like this version of Corinne a lot better than trying to force some type of like, wahahaha-ness about her. This like shrewd businesswoman almost.
Sure.
I also want to say that Bob's arm vein is fucking huge.
Bob's a very veiny guy.
He's a he's a phlebotomist wet dream.
It happens when you're old and skinny.
And strong.
And strong, yeah.
Low body fat, high muscle mass.
Mm-hmm. So Corinne says, hey, we don't want Bob in the end, but we need the numbers and we can trust him. So, hey.
Hey.
For now, he'll do. We get a tree mail with swimsuits. So we're doing a swimming challenge. And Marcus jumps in and says, hey, they have hope. We need to crush their hope. We need to send them into despair.
All right.
All right. Sure. I didn't realize I was playing Undertale today, but whatever. immunity challenge.
Oh, also, I just want to say the individual, both the individual idol and the immunity idol, I do not like them. Not a big fan.
I haven't noticed the individual one.
It was almost like a shrunken head. Like, it wasn't like a very realistic one. It was like a artistic version of it, but I was just like, it's just, we're back in the, I don't know if this is actually like, if this is cultural like representation or appropriation, but either way, it just feels a little off.
The tribal one seems better to me than previous iterations of something similar.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. I would still like to avoid the humanoid depictions of anyone that is a person of color.
That'd be great. There's hundreds of years of history of going to Africa and doing that wrong that I can't help but feel in my chest.
Yeah. So that happens. But then we get to go to immunity challenge, and this is the one immunity challenge that I want to play more than anything of what we've seen thus far.
Dude, every time somebody dove headfirst that slide, it looked like it hurt so bad.
Yes, it did. They are sliding down a giant slip and slide into water, like launched into water, where they have to retrieve a colored number tile, bring that back up to the top, and then somebody else will go. Everyone has to go once. At the end, one person does a math puzzle with a combo lock, and if you unlock that combo lock, you win. You have to chop a rope, yeah. But essentially you win.
You do a symbolic element, but yeah.
Yeah. Paloma and Sugar sit this one out. Bob and Ken are the puzzle solvers because everything up until then doesn't really matter.
True. Yeah, it's more of like how much of a head start you get. But really it is just Bob versus Ken.
Yeah.
This is the mental version of that challenge they did in Pearl Islands where it was like Rupert versus Austin, where they had like everyone was holding the person up, but then they would all like they had to drop after a certain amount of time. And so it's like, oh, it's just a one-on-one challenge. Like This is the mental version of that.
Yeah. I want to go down that slip and slide, but you're right. The whiplash looked like a hard hit.
It looked like it hurt a lot.
It seemed like they jumped later than they should have. Like, there was a flat landing pad that they just, like, were running on instead of sliding.
That's funny, because I think the opposite. I think that it is, like, they jumped later than they should have.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Oh, okay. Jumped earlier than they should have.
Oh, okay, really?
Because I
don't
want
them to run down the tube.
Well, all right, maybe you're right. I don't know. I maybe like higher than they should have. Everyone just like went like 4 feet in the air and just landed straight on their ribs.
There are better ways to slide on a slip and slide than what we saw. A lot of whiplash. Corinne doesn't get all the way, and that's funny to me that you have to like scoot your way. A very relatable going down a water slide feeling. Coda leads for most of this. There's a slight, like the very first person, I forget who it is, for Fong is good.
Yeah, I don't remember who it is either.
I remember. And then it flips the other direction because...
But it's not that much. They're not that far behind.
Yeah. Susie's not very athletic.
No.
Coming back.
No,
so
she is not.
That's where the problem is. Ace does a fun little corkscrew.
What a fucking douchebag. Ace is a fucking tool.
So Coda's in the lead heading to the puzzle, and it's an interesting puzzle. I didn't get the specifics.
No,
of it.
But I really like the puzzle. It's funny you said that you wanted to do the slip and slide. I want to do the puzzle.
Perfect.
Because I like this is basically a practice LSAT question.
Yes.
And I loved taking the practice LSATs. It's like it was something like the last two digits will equal the sum of the middle two digits, and then there's other rules around it that like would. There's only one way to put it in the correct order. And clearly it's difficult because they both get it wrong at least once, maybe twice.
Mm-hmm. Bob gets it wrong twice, I believe. Yeah, I've definitely taken this practice LSAT test because it's all about numbers.
Wait, you took a practice LSAT?
I've taken some questions online.
Oh, okay.
Just for fun to see what it's like.
All right.
I was pretty good at it.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. So both Bob and Ken struggle for a little bit, but Ken figures it out and Bob just doesn't. I think Bob says afterward that he was misunderstanding a portion of the question. Something to do with the first and the last one, with those digits have to be something.
That makes sense.
Doesn't matter. Ken wins it, gets his hero complex for a day, and sends Coda to tribal for the first time.
Could this be a reversal of fortunes? Probably not.
But also watching Coda watch Bob and yelling at him, pull the damn handle,
Bob. Pull the handle, Bob. What are you doing?
Just go faster. It's really funny.
Don't sit there and double check your work. Pull it and see if you're wrong.
Uh-huh. So back at Coda, Sugar talks a little bit about how hard it was in exile. I don't know. I took a wrong turn. I'm not really sure. And then talks to us. I might be good at this.
She might be.
This whole Survivor game? Might be
I'm
good.
Excited for her. I think she could be.
Yeah. And then she tells Ace that she found the idol.
So that might have been a mistake.
But Ace seems all in on her. We can run this game with your idol.
She thinks that he's the helpful place.
Yeah.
Ace the helpful place. That's their slogan.
I got it.
Great.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware store.
Yeah.
Anyway.
She has hardware and he might be the useful place. The helpful place.
I want you to explain this.
The idol is hardware.
Oh, okay. That's not where my brain went.
I know.
She has hardware.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. Okay. He wants to get out Paloma really bad. And Paloma sits there watching. I'm like the animals. I just watch. She sounds like she says prance. I think she... The subtitle says pounce.
Yeah.
I'm going to prance on someone and eat them up.
No, you're not.
No, she's not.
Okay, we haven't talked about it yet. I love Paloma. I'm so sad she's gone. She's so fucking weird. She's so weird, dude.
She's quirky and fun.
Yeah.
And we were kind of robbed of more Paloma content.
I know.
Unless she said something transphobic, in which case I don't feel too bad about it.
Yeah, I don't love that if she's the one that did that. But I like how fucking weird she is.
She seems like theater kid.
Yeah, and she's just, like, authentically herself.
Yeah.
And that person is a fucking weirdo.
Mm-hmm. So she, Paloma, goes to Corinne, is trying to work Corinne and this kind of group of four. Like, hey, Ace is a problem. We need to get rid of Ace, and he's running this game.
I think she's right. I think Ace should have been the target here.
I think she's right, too, but...
Survivor players are getting smarter about, like, we want them on the tribe because they're helpful, but man, these types of people are harder to get rid of later.
Context-wise, though, I think it's important to note that in the first episode, we got rid of a physical, like, someone physical on the Fong side, and it did not help them, and they lost the next
Who?
One.
Michelle?
Yeah.
Like, Michelle's not that physical.
More so than Jillian.
Well, yeah.
And then we vote out Jillian, and suddenly they have more success.
Okay, but I don't think that if they vote out Jillian first, I don't think they win that second immunity.
I think they could. It wasn't that far away.
Well, it's hard to say because it was luck.
Exactly.
The keys were luck. So, and Jillian was doing nothing. That correct. Is true.
So, I don't know. Context-wise, it makes sense why you're like, oh, yeah, Ace is a problem, but we should maybe not cut our really strong people yet.
But if you're in the Shrek Alliance, just, like, as long as you're four make it through, who cares?
It's fair.
You can lose every immunity up to that point. Like, I mean, I know that you don't want to go into the merge with less people, but I don't know. I would much rather go in with less people than go against Ace.
So Corinne, this is where she says, I don't think his accent is real and he's not running this game.
Yeah.
She goes to Charlie. This is very high school. This person goes to this person who goes to this person. And this is where they talk about how Paloma was up to fail. I know I said it was before, but here it was. And they talk about, hey, we could get rid of Paloma. We could do that anytime. But now might be a good time to get rid of Ace.
Do it, you cowards.
Do it, you cowards. Anyway, Tribal. Tribal's pretty straightforward. Ace is trying to push the strong, like, we need strong. Oh, man. Sugar talks about her dad, and she gets emotional. And Marcus chimes in, hey, you know, Sugar's playing this like she doesn't have the idol, which, to be fair, I'd do the same. I don't know if she has it or not. Something to keep an eye on. I don't think she does. It's kind of the gist I get from him.
She found the idol, and she does a better job of having less suspicion on her than Dan, who did not find the idol or mm-hmm. even the second clue.
Paloma really goes after Ace here, and Ace goes back the other direction, and Jeff's like, man, are you two siblings?
No, what was, okay, I wrote it down. It was like, talking about like, how is Ace an asset to the tribe? And this isn't Paloma, this is somebody else. Goes like, well, he's condescending. And Jeff goes, so wait, how is that an asset? And she goes, it's not.
It was Kelly.
Kelly. And Jeff's like, okay.
Kelly, in also someone who hates Ace, I guess, but
yeah.
doesn't show any of that.
And doesn't vote for him.
No, she does.
She does? Okay.
She's the other vote for
Ace.
Oh,
Corin doesn't. That's right. Yep.
So that's really funny. And Jeff's like, you two could be siblings in another world. And Paloma says, maybe in 1,000 years when I'm dead.
It's so ridiculous.
My God. I do want to point out her comment, though, about how, hey, you can't come to tribal council. Ace saying this. You can't come to tribal council without being a little bit scared. And Paloma says, you're obviously not that scared. You don't have your bag with you.
That's such a good call out,
it's
though.
It's a good one.
Ace tries to play it off. I don't think it works.
No.
But like, there wasn't really a lot of stuff I wanted to take with me. Fuck off.
So then we vote, and Paloma is gone in a 7-2 line.
Not a sweep.
Not a sweep. Her confessional is hilarious here at the end. If Ace wins, I'll probably never watch Survivor again. Good. Feel the salt.
Boy, those two fucking hated each other with a smile. Like, they would say the meanest shit about each other with a smile on their face.
Yeah. How do you think Paloma does in Future Survivor?
I think just because of, like, her perceived strength, real or perceived strength in challenges, or I guess lack thereof, she's always a candidate to go home early, unfortunately. Because there, different parts of the game are harder for different people. If you are in the group of people that are perceived as being good at challenges, if you are Crystal, if you are Dan, or, you know, whatever, Ace, you're less likely to be a target pre-merge and then more likely afterwards. And Paloma seems to be one of the weaker physical competitors probably in most any season she's on. Like, she might be stronger than a couple of the people on Fong, maybe like Jillian or the older lady that's still around. I don't remember her name on Fong.
Susan,
yes. But she's always going to be in danger.
Susie.
She's always going to be in danger. However, so I'd say like 80% of the time she's going home in the first, let's say, 2 to 3 tribals that her team goes to. That being said, if she can make it past that, if she can get through that filter, I think that she actually has a chance to go really far in this game. It doesn't seem like people disliked her.
Except for Ace.
But I don't think, but people also don't seem to like Ace.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, she's funny and charismatic, and that can get you really far in Survivor. So, like, she's a potential, like, top 3 or, like, even potential winner, I think, if she can get through the physical aspect of the early game.
That's fair. There's not a ton out there about her today. Like,
it's crazy that if she still watches Survivor or not will now be a spoiler for this season.
She went to the 10-year anniversary party, says she got married, was having a son, and currently living in Japan due to her husband's job in the Air Force.
Cool.
So that's fun. There is an IGN interview, and just kind of skimming it, there's not a whole lot of relevant information, but I do want to talk about this one section where she's like, let's talk about Ace. What was it about him that rubbed you so much the wrong way? And Paloma says, everything.
I get it. I think he'd rub me the wrong way too.
It's so funny. It starts off with, oh, Ace, blah, blah, blah. And now it's like everything. It gets progressively worse as the day gets colder. Ace and I are like night and day. Our personalities are completely different. He's just the type of person that I don't necessarily want to associate myself with. He's arrogant. He's cocky. He's done a lot in his life. He's a very smart guy. He's traveled to a lot of places, but he's not humble about it whatsoever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't want to be friends with him, let alone be stuck on Survivor for 9 days.
We love a certified hater.
Yeah. And your protagonist of the episode.
Sugar.
Yeah.
This is Sugar's episode, and it's a really good episode.
Ah, Sugar.
Sugar, how you get so fly?
Oh, I was going for a very different song, but that's fine. All right. Anything else before we shut this down?
No, that's it.
Boom. Bumper. That'll do it for this episode of the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast. Jared, what would you like to promote?
Hi, it's time to ask you guys for reviews again. I kind of did it in the finale. I'm doing it again. Very much please. Thank you. We like them. It makes us feel good about ourselves. Or if you put them, or if you give us bad reviews, it makes us feel bad about ourselves. That's all. What about you, Steven?
Nice. I'm going to promote something. This, I don't promote myself super often, but I'm going to do that. So I was recently informed that I will be competing in the C2E2 talent show.
Hell yeah.
So if you want to come see me perform, it'll be April 11th, I think 4:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. So if you're coming to C2E2 in Chicago on the Friday day, that's when I'll be performing. It'll be a song. By all means, don't come just for that, because it's going to be like 2.5 minutes long.
But if you're there, stop by.
Come watch me be a goof. Anyway, that's exciting for me.
Nice.
For my co-host, Jared, this is Steven.
For my host, Steven, this is Jared.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.